This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Stayed on the puck as Rostovic at the side of the net. He makes a steal. Curls back in behind the goal. Got to the forehand. Try to get it out in front and get it a shot. They score! Nikolai Ehlers got to the slot. Rostovic with a little cutback move. Put it on his stick. Ehlers wasted no time. And bang! Winnipeg has a 3-2 lead. Baby!
The Jets would go on to win last night's contest 3-2, stealing grand theft in San Jose last night by the Winnipeg Jets, taking home that victory. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can reach us here in studio at Illegal Curve. You can also do so via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. Gentlemen, let's get right into it. Last night's Jets-Sharks game, one of the most one-sided games we have seen in the past decade of Winnipeg Jets hockey. Yet somehow, some way, on the back of Connor Hellebuck and his fantastic performance last night, a 51-save performance, the Jets escape San Jose with a 3-2 victory in regulation, stealing 2 points and jetting off to Las Vegas. What a performance by Connor Hellebuck. And on the flip side, what an absolutely woeful performance by his teammates in front of him.
Yeah, maybe the best goaltending performance that we've ever seen in Jets 2.0 history. I mean, you go back to the Jets 1.0, I still say that Nikolai Habibulin in Detroit, what was that, game three?
No, game five.
Game five.
Yes.
When I think he had around 50 saves as well, right?
Very, very close to that.
So yes. I was actually thinking about that yesterday, guys. And I was also thinking about that type of game reminded me of the late 1990s and Dominic Hasek. Like, it reminded me of those days when Hasek used to just stop everything. Mm-hmm. And you almost, I don't know about you guys, but I was watching that game last night and I was thinking, the Jets are going to steal this one. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, as a player, you're watching your goalie stop shot after shot. And I think the Sharks had, what did they have, 35 or 36 shots after the second?
39. They had 28 shots in the second period, which is... I mean, the crazy part is
it was 11-6 after the first.
And Dave, you tweeted this out. That actually is a record.
Yeah. Well, 28 shots in the course of a game is a reasonable number.
Yeah, sure. I know.
I mean, 28 shots in the course of a period is not a reasonable performance by an NHL team.
Right. And I got the impression, I can't speak for you guys, but, you know, I was thinking, you know, as a player, I mean, you have extra motivation to come out of that game with the 2 points, knowing that your goalie has kept you. Like, the Sharks could have easily had 4 goals, 5 goals after 2 periods, and Hellebuck was just sensational. And it's coming off of a game against Anaheim where you knew that Hellebuck was not happy being pulled, mm-hmm. and no goalie, Dave, is ever happy being pulled, but that game against Anaheim, let's be honest, was a gong show. Mm-hmm. 7 goals. I mean, the whole team was disappointed with the way they played, especially Hellebuck. And we know, guys, that since Hellebuck has been in the NHL, he usually responds after a bad game. He usually responds with a really good game, right? So, I mean, give Hellebuck the first, second, third star. I know that Dave tweeted that out last night. 51 saves. I mean, he almost should be player of the week just for that one game alone.
The high danger chances in last night's game.
17-2.
17-2, which is even more remarkable because the Jets had 3 goals. But, I mean, the numbers... And I know numbers are for losers, and this is a case where the San Jose Sharks numbers literally are for losers. But the numbers are so one-sided that the Jets, you know, will gladly take their 2 points. Mm-hmm. And they'll jet off to Vegas, and they did last night. They play the Golden Knights.
I was wondering if they take a plane or if they just, like, took a bus, because San Jose to Vegas is only, what,
probably about
5 hours?
Probably about 12 hours.
Is it 12?
No, it's not that long, actually. But it's not... they certainly take a plane. They don't take a bus anywhere.
I was going to say, guys...
This isn't the AHL.
I'm not sure. Well, no, they take a bus from New York to New Jersey.
Well, fine. I think they stay in the same hotel, maybe.
Drew, my California geography is not as good as yours.
Well, San Jose is in Northern California, right. And so you'd have to go sort of Tahoe across. What, Shauna,
7 hours.
Producer Shauna sort of
It's almost 8 hours.
Almost 8 hours.
To drive.
They fly. The point is they fly.
And you have to go through Bakersfield, which is questionable.
The
that
real
flight
point
must
is,
only be like half an hour.
Well, it'd be like here to Minneapolis.
Yeah, it's like here to Minneapolis. It's
45 minutes, under an hour. The point is, last night's contest was about as one-sided as you're going to see. And yeah, the Jets are happy to take their 2 points. But if you heard the audio coming out of the dressing room last night, and it's available on illegalcurve.com. I'm a company man, in case you missed it. The Jets knew they stole it. And basically, I think almost all the comments, maybe with the exception of those coming from Connor Hellebuck, because he deserves all the accolades that he got, were a little tongue-in-cheek and a little facetious in that the Jets were saying, well, we rope-a-doped them and we tired them out by letting them shoot their arms off for the entirety of the game, and then we jumped on the opportunity. I mean, the Jets know.
They didn't think that, though, of course.
Of course not. The Jets know that they absolutely did not deserve that victory. They're not going to apologize for winning, but they did not deserve that victory. And there's so much in that game that is concerning, with the exception of Connor Hellebuck's performance, that you wonder, how they sort of are going to respond tonight in Vegas when they get another opportunity to flush that game, albeit a win.
But the only thing to factor in, of course, is that tonight in Vegas, you're probably going to, you have Adam Lowry back for sure because he's done finishing his 2-game suspension. You could have Patrick Laine back in the lineup. Mm-hmm. Nathan Beaulieu will not probably be in the lineup. I think the coaching staff said yesterday that they're probably going to hold him out for at least probably another game just to let him heal.
Yeah, maybe Tuesday night against New Jersey.
Tuesday against New Jersey, you'll probably see him. So the one thing to factor in is that you're going to have potentially two guys with some NHL experience that's going to, bolster your lineup a little bit. And the reality is that, CJ Cease is making his NHL debut yesterday. You've got Logan Shaw. So you've got a roster that's not exactly your A roster.
Sure. You have a fourth line that's basically filled with
AHL
lines.
Yeah, your AHL guys. Yeah. And again, like I said, CJ Cease is a guy making his NHL debut, only a second-year pro. So, I mean, he went to college, so he's not exactly a young guy, but in terms of pro experience, he's relatively young. So you've got a lineup that's, not necessarily optimum. And again, your goalie has to be your best player. But what did we talk about at the beginning of the season? We said there's going to be a lot of nights, especially with this defensive core, that Connor Hellebuck is going to have to be your best player. And you know what? Look, we saw last night, that was an example. Now, we were talking about this stat that I saw in the Jets PR, put this out. The Jets are 7-1-2 when they give up 50 or more shots, which is just a bizarre stat. But again, it's a function of just kind of this team's reality. And right now, Hellebuck is going to have to be your best player.
Yeah, no teams where the reality should be giving up 53 shots on goal, though. No team's reality is as poor as the performance was last night. You watch that game, and the Jets trying to break out of their own zone, they almost couldn't.
Well, they only gave up 25 shots in the first and third periods. So,
there you go. That's something they can hang their hat on. 25 shots total in the first and third.
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
But they couldn't break out of their own zone. It was remarkable the number of turnovers at their own blue line.
There was some sloppiness,
which
sure.
is certainly a function of San Jose playing an aggressive style. But the Jets also just looked like, as soon as they had the puck on their stick, it was panic time. Which is, it certainly speaks to the lack of talent in certain areas that they were, and how undermanned they were last night. But that looked like such a mismatch. It looked like you were watching a high school team play against, a middle school team at times.
Right. And, can we talk about, boys, something about that game that I thought was a crucial part of that game? And I realize you could easily say that Evander Kane's disallowed goal followed up shortly after, I think it was 30 seconds,
something
Blake
like
Wheeler scored.
That's
easy to point to as a turning point in the game, right? Even though San Jose tied the game up in the third period. But to me, remember when Matthew Perreault took that tripping penalty at the end of the second period? I think San Jose had something like 8 shots on that power play. The Jets killed the power play off, and I realized they only had to kill 2 power plays off in the game. But for me, that was huge. I agree with you, Drew, that the Jets are giving up too many shots. They gave up way too many shots. Really, you should never be giving up more than, let's say, 40 shots in a game. But let's stick to the actual game and what I was talking about there. The penalty kill, I think at one point, I don't know, I got to admit, I didn't watch the early part of the third period because I had to change my son's diaper. But when you're talking about the second, well, it's the reality. PVR is my best friend, Drew.
I know.
So when you're talking about that penalty kill, I'm pretty sure, if you remember, Dave, you have a better memory than I than I do. I've killed way too many brain cells. But when you're talking about that penalty, that power play, didn't Blake Wheeler lose his stick at one point?
Yeah, yes. It was a five. And he, right? and he thought the puck left the zone.
Right.
So he went to get a stick, and it ended up being like a 5-on-3
for a second.
And
the Jets were playing that classic kind of, you know, you learn about the box, the penalty. Obviously, you know, teams don't just call it the box. They're a little bit more sophisticated than that now. But the Jets, I thought, did a pretty good job of just getting through that, killing that penalty off. And yes, Thomas Hertl scored and tied it up in the third. But I thought that was just, I thought it was a really gritty effort by the Jets. I can't think of a better word.
I think you're being too complimentary. I got to be honest. That performance.
No, I'm not saying the whole performance was great. I'm saying that particular, I thought
you're
that,
talking about
that,
you're talking about
that penalty kill.
You shouldn't give up eight shots on a penalty kill.
Obviously, Hellebuck was brilliant.
Yeah, Hellebuck
was brilliant. I'm just saying that easily could have been a point in the game where it got out of control. That's all I'm saying.
You want to know who gets credit for the Jets' victory last night? Who deserves praise for the victory? One player. Connor Hellebuck. Anybody else?
Haven't we been saying that all segment?
Yeah, I know, but
hasn't that been the whole purpose of the segment?
I'm pretty sure that was literally what all of our points have been for the last 10 minutes. You're right, Drew. I'm giving you a hard time, but yes, Hellebuck was the first, second, third star.
No question. And everybody in that dressing room, I'm sure, went up to him and apologized and said thank you after that game.
The one thing you do have to factor in, though, is that's the San Jose team that's one of the bottom teams in terms of points right now in the division.
Mm-hmm. And they've been struggling this season, sure.
But the point is that you knew that was a team that was desperate for a win. And they were desperate for points. And they played like a team that was desperate for a win and desperate for points.
I would say, guys, though, almost too desperate.
Explain.
And what I mean by that is, like, the San Jose Sharks, there's a good chance that they're not going to recover from this.
4-9-1 right now, the Sharks are. And they've been struggling. They've lost four games in a row now.
Well, that's what I'm saying, Drew. Like, if they don't turn it around immediately, like, not a week from now, not 2 weeks from now, they might be done. And when you look at this roster, okay, mm-hmm. and Erik Karlsson and Brent Burns, it seems like they're on the ice the whole game.
Yeah, they weren't very good last night.
Well, they lost. I mean, and yeah,
they lost, but they were also responsible for they were on the ice when Roslovic and when Ehlers scored the game winning goal.
I actually thought Tim Heed was one of their best defensemen.
Well, which but tells you a little bit. They're not paying Tim Heed a combined $20 million,
right? But the point I was making is, like, you look at it's an old team.
Yeah.
And I'm not just talking about Marlowe and Thornton. I'm talking about, I mean, Vlasic is not young. Burns, I love him. I mean, one of the best defensemen. He's not getting younger. Carlson's not getting any younger. Like, yeah, they have some good young players. I mean, and, you know, Kevin LeBanc is going to cash in on his next contract. And Timo Meier, Thomas Hertl. I mean, these are good young players. But the point is, this is a win-now team.
Yeah.
So if you miss the playoffs, I mean, that's going to be a colossal failure.
Goaltending right now is their biggest issue.
But we knew that going into the season.
Sure. But last year, they also started slow, and then they picked it up towards the end of the year and made the playoffs, obviously, and obviously went far in the playoffs, going to the Western Conference Final. So, you know, this San Jose Sharks team is definitely in a rut right now, and the Jets are beyond fortunate to have stolen 2 points last night in San Jose. What did you guys think about about Paul Maurice's comments post-game, basically saying that, you know, good for Jack Roslovic sort of setting up Nikolaj Ehlers' game-winning goal because he'd been absolutely terrible prior to that play?
Didn't think he was that bad.
Well, but I was a little surprised by it because he had called out Kyle Connor
two games ago.
In the Anaheim game where Connor had 9 shots and he said, yeah, he basically said, yeah, he was a player. Like he was, you could see that there was something there. And it's interesting because, you know, Paul Maurice a long time ago said something about to the effect of not using the media to call out his players.
Well, apparently that rule has been violated.
And I guess he wanted to motivate his player. But, I mean, it was a curious comment because, again, we know Paul Maurice is savvy enough with the media that when he says something, it's by design. It's not by chance. So I thought it was a bit of a curious. Like I definitely remember hearing it while I was listening to the postgame audio, and I was thinking to myself, like, I raised an eyebrow because I thought, okay, you know, like that's it.
It's a softball question.
Well, no, and it's interesting because he could have just used, like, he clearly had a purpose in it, but I think he just came across as a little probably harsher than he intended. Because if you right after he followed that up by talking about why that could be inspirational to a player simply because you know that you haven't had your best game and then you can go out and be a difference maker. So I think that was his greater point, but I think he was just a little harsher than generally we hear him speak about his players to the media.
It was definitely eyebrow raising to, you know, to echo your comment there. It was that the whole Jets performance last night was eyebrow raising. They ended up, of course, stealing the 3-2 victory. They'll be in action tonight in Vegas, which we'll talk about throughout the next 2+ hours. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, Dustin Byfuglien elects for ankle surgery, another twist and turn in the saga of Byfuglien and the Winnipeg Jets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
You know, going back to, I guess, you know, the start of training camp, that's when, you know, I met with Dustin, and, you know, those are all, you know, pretty well documented stuff. And obviously, over the course of time here, he, you know, has had an ankle surgery here now, and you know, we're dealing with that. So, you know, with respect to really anything else that I can comment on, you know, that's pretty much, you know, where it's at this point in time.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That's Winnipeg Jets general manager Kevin Cheveldayoff addressing the Dustin Byfuglien news of the week.
Did he address it?
Well, okay, maybe not.
A lot of words.
You're right. He didn't address it. He just commented on it. How about that?
Mm-hmm.
Talking about Byfuglien, of course, electing to undergo ankle surgery in Minnesota. He's going to be out of the lineup or on the shelf, I suppose, because he's been out of the lineup already.
He's not in the lineup.
Yeah, he's going to be on the shelf for 4 months as a result of the surgery.
So the issue is that there's a couple of reports, right? You have Friedman saying that till the new year, which is about 2 months,
right?
And then Dreger says up to 4 months. So I mean, there's a pretty wide window for recovery. But anyways,
My point is that the cautious optimism that he was close to returning to the Jets lineup that was reported a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's coming up anytime soon.
Well, you know, in Drake's defense, though, he didn't put a timeline on it, right? He just said.
And with all due respect to Darren Dreger, who's a way better hockey mind than yours truly, when he came out and said that on Insider Trading, what did I say to you guys the following Saturday? I said, I think this is the Jets organization trying to apply some pressure. And I stand by what I said then, because I don't believe that Byfuglien was getting close to coming back to the Jets lineup, because if he was...
Well, we don't know that.
Of course we don't know that. I'm speculating. This is what I'm speculating. That the Jets were trying to apply a little bit of pressure to get him to change his mind or make up his mind. And obviously it didn't work, because he decided to undergo ankle surgery independent of the team.
Let me tell you something. If you try and apply standard logic to this player, then you don't understand this player.
Because he does march to the beat of his own drum.
Right. I mean, more than any guy, and we've seen it from various, like, former teammates, you know it just from being around the team. I mean, he is not anything like any other player in the NHL.
He doesn't care what anybody has
to
say.
That's right. So the idea that you would... That's the only flaw in the logic from my mind, Drew, is that I just don't think that you would be able to, quote, apply external pressure to this guy, and he's going to care one iota.
Well, clearly he doesn't. But I think that doesn't stop... That doesn't necessarily stop somebody from trying to apply that external pressure.
I'm not saying you can't try and fail at something. I'm just saying that, like, it would be a horrible assessment and judgment if you think that that is going to work on that type of player.
Do you believe that at this stage, we know he underwent the ankle surgery, do you believe that there is bad blood between Dustin Byfuglien and the Winnipeg Jets organization?
I'll say this much, Drew. I don't know the answer to that, but it's possible. And
do the tea leaves not indicate there seems to be some pretty good bad blood between the Jets and Dustin Byfuglien?
The only problem here, boys, is there's way too many tea leaves. Like, and there's a lot of grasping at straws here.
Yeah.
We saw what happened, you know, on Twitter with people speculating and all that. And it's ridiculous. Like, Dustin Byfuglien knows what he wants to do. And I'm probably guessing that at this point, Chevy doesn't know what Buff is going to do. Because if he knew what Buff was going to do, he would probably go out and either acquire a defenseman or factor him into the lineup going forward. But there's a big piece of this story, guys, that we don't know about, right? And there's a lot of speculation about what that could be, and we don't have to go over that because a lot of it is
speculation.
You know, issues with teammates or issues with coaches. But the point is, there's a big piece of that that hasn't been talked about or hasn't been reported on.
You guys
right?
have both been of the opinion.
I don't think this is all about the injury. I don't think Buff decided, I'm just going to take a year off, not get paid, and then go have surgery done and not tell the Jets about it. Like, what I'm saying about Drew is something is not adding up here. There's a big piece of the equation missing.
Okay, here's my opinion, and I'm going to emphasize opinion. I don't know this for fact. I believe that Dustin Byfuglien thinks that the Jets misdiagnosed or mishandled his ankle injury. As a result, he elected to undergo this surgery on his own in Minnesota outside of the, I'm going to say permission, for lack of a better word, of the Winnipeg Jets organization. Because I don't believe that the trust between the player and the organization is where it should be when it comes to his medical information or his medical status. That's the only logical reason for a player to bypass $8 million and undergo surgery outside of the organization's auspices. It's the only.
But if there was a misdiagnosis, why would you choose to not be paid?
Because if you come to the team and you don't believe that they're going to agree with your diagnosis, or that you think that they're underestimating the severity of the injury, you wouldn't trust to go to the team.
But
that's the only way it makes any sense to leave $8 million on the table.
Again, though,
but
Drew,
if Buff's doctor is saying that it requires surgery.
Right.
So you're saying that was presented to the Jets, maybe?
I'm saying that I think Dustin Byfuglien felt or feels that his ankle and the healing of this ankle, probably going back to last year.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is a doctor had to, like, Buff doesn't just make that decision. I need surgery. A doctor has to tell him that.
Right, I think the medical opinions differed.
So you're saying that an independent doctor and the Jets doctor disagreed?
Had different medical opinions, yes.
And then so he decided to I'm going to quit the team. I'm going to go on a personal leave of absence, and I'm willing to forego $8 million.
Yes, because what...
There's still something that's not adding up there.
Well, I mean, I think once it got to the point where if he had never undergone surgery, if he had just, left the $8 million on the table and said, I'm done, I'm taking a leave of absence or I'm taking a leave, and he never underwent surgery, I think then you say, okay, that's, a little bit of Dustin Byfuglien being Dustin Byfuglien, a unique character. The fact that he then left the team or didn't report to the team, was suspended, and then underwent the surgery indicates to me that there was a medical difference of opinion between the two sides, Dave.
You know what? Again,
and I'm speculating. This is my opinion.
No, I know, but you're applying conventional wisdom to a player who I just think defies it. So I think, when the normal human being says, "Why wouldn't you just go on long-term injury reserve, take your $8 million, and run away?"
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just don't think that Dustin Byfuglien, who's won a Stanley Cup, who's accumulated probably about $60 million in career earnings to this point, is going to be influenced by that sort of thinking. I honestly don't. I think that the situation is rife for speculation simply because of the airtightness with respect to actual factual information.
Well, that's what I was saying. And Drew, you might be right, and maybe you're half right. Like, right? Maybe
that half right would be better than I usually am.
No, but I'm actually being serious here. Like, maybe that's a piece of it.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm saying is, like, if we're looking at a jigsaw puzzle here, boys, like, there's a good half, maybe three quarters of that puzzle mm-hmm. that is missing, right? Like, is it a difference of opinion amongst doctors? Maybe. But, like, Ray Ferraro was on the afternoon ride yesterday, and Hudson Rick asked him straight up. Like, have you ever seen anything like this before? Mm-hmm. And he said no. This is like Ray Ferraro, one of the best hockey analysts in the game. And I'm sure Darren Dreger, Bob McKenzie would say the same thing. Like, this is kind of unprecedented, mm-hmm. right? Like, there have been differences of opinion amongst doctors. And Drew, I'm not going to pretend to know how that works. Like, if Buff's doctor and the Jets team doctor disagree, like, who... Do they go to a third doctor?
CBA actually has provisions for that.
Well, but I guess what I'm saying is still, there has to be another step or something else had to have happened for him to say, I think I might be done playing hockey.
What do you think of Paul Maurice's quote last Saturday on the TV broadcast, you know, where he was interviewed after the Heritage Classic. This is the quote: "We miss one of our stars." This is before the surgery, of course. Mm-hmm. "I'm holding out hope, but his happiness and sanity comes first." I mean, that's Paul Maurice's quote.
And sounds like Maurice knows as much as we do. Like, I don't think Maurice has, obviously he has more intel than I would or you would or Dave would, just because he's the coach of the team. But it sounds like it's still up in the air, guys.
Well, hang on. You've been nothing but optimistic about Dustin Byfuglien returning to the Winnipeg Jets.
Well, that's
Jets.
Also because I'm a huge fan of Byfuglien.
On November 2nd, do you still think Dustin Byfuglien returns to this team?
I'm not as optimistic as I used to be.
Dave?
Do I think on November 2nd he'll be returning? No. the answer to your question.
This year or next year, does Dustin Byfuglien return to the Winnipeg Jets organization?
You know, Drew, it's a fair question. I think the level of communication between the player and the team, if it's there, and Cheveldayoff knows that Byfuglien is done. Like, at this point, even knowing, like, he's out, going to be out for 4 months, wouldn't you just say, listen, is that your final decision? We're going to move forward. We're going to make a decision. So, I mean, and it's possible that he just doesn't want to, you know, tip his hand to the rest of the league because he's already kind of against it in terms of, you know, teams are going to know now there's a desperation for him to acquire.
Teams are going
to
throw you anchors. They're not going to throw you lifelines.
That's right. Teams aren't there to make your life better.
Yeah.
So it's possible that maybe they want to keep this quiet some more, you know, just because they don't want to look like, hey, maybe we're going to make a move, and they'll try and make it look like it's going to be a move in addition to Byfuglien. But I'm just saying, like, yeah, it seems unrealistic, but we haven't learned anything really in super insightful, because the truth is, let's go on the Friedman news that it's going to be until the new year. So by January,
put this quote on the board.
Okay.
From yours truly,
Drew Mandel.
And you can freeze and cold take me afterwards if you like.
Sure.
"I will be shocked if Dustin Byfuglien plays another game as a member of the Winnipeg Jets."
So does he play another game for another team?
That wouldn't surprise me. But I will be shocked if he plays another game as a member of the Winnipeg Jets. Put it on the board. We'll see. When we come back, Jason Bell joins us for more Winnipeg Jets conversation. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. This segment of the program brought to you by our good friend Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the entire family. To make an appointment today, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend Jason Bell. You know Jason, of course, from his coverage of the Winnipeg Jets in the Winnipeg Free Press. Jason, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, guys.
Our pleasure, Jason. Obviously.
West Coast, Jason.
West Coast, Jason. You're nice enough to join us while vacationing on the beautiful West Coast of Canada. So we do appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule there, Jay.
Not
an issue. Thank you. Last night, of course, Jason, the Winnipeg Jets absolutely thieving 2 points from the San Jose Sharks in that 3-2 victory on the back of Connor Hellebuyck. The team won't apologize for a victory, of course, nor should they. But, you know, how concerning is that from your perspective to watch an NHL team with that kind of performance when you knew how up against it they've been and, you know, their struggles so far this season, that is the effort that they come out with?
Yeah, it's definitely perplexing. Boy, I'm having a tough time here on the West Coast.
We'll get you some coffee early.
Perplexing indeed, particularly when obviously the effort in Anaheim was really not that good either, and obviously Connor Hellebuyck made amends for that himself, but the guys in front of him didn't. And you know, I think about that one last night, guys, and then I start to look at the 7-7 record, and I start to wonder. I mean, you know, you think about, other than the game in New York to open the season, where maybe they deserved a better fate. Boy, this team could easily be, what, like 3-7-1, or, well, my math is so bad. What does it say? No, 3-11 and
3-10-1, I think, is what exactly, they're 7-7 right now. So 3-7-1.
About that game, I think about them being outplayed slightly in Chicago and still coming away with a point. The OT win in Calgary in the Heritage Classic against Calgary, the OT win against Edmonton. They've been on the receiving end of maybe getting better fates than they deserve, but I don't think they've squandered too many points, and that does have to be concerning.
Jay, your colleague Mike McIntyre of the Free Press, he's on the road trip in California and Nevada, and he, of course, was talking to Paul Maurice after the game, and, I follow Mike on Twitter, and, he reported what Maurice said about Roslovic, and the quote was that Roslovic created that goal, and he needed to because he was so bad through 2.5. But you know what? Good for him. That's important. I mean, what did you think of those comments? Because we were talking about it earlier in the show, and, to us, it seemed like he pretty much threw Roslovic under the bus.
And it's not the first time, I don't think, as he's pointed out Jack Roslovic's play a couple of times this season, and then he kind of covers himself with, it's one of those backhanded comment deals. And I've really liked the way Jack Roslovic has played over the course of the last 3 weeks when he's been given some added responsibility. Initially, of course, he was put on the line with Lowry and Kopp. And the deal with playing with those two gentlemen is always that it's going to make you work a lot harder and you're going to hone your defensive game. And then, of course, they always have lots of offensive zone time. But with the situation with Lowry going down with the suspension, and so lines have been juggled and injuries and whatnot. Jack Roslovic's been bumped up a little bit in the lineup, and I've really liked his play. I just find it fascinating that Paul Maurice would call out a young player like that when really his history has not been to call out players. If there were ever a case for calling out players, certainly you could look at your captain and one of your alternate captains who play center ice, Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler. I've really been disappointed with the way, in particular, the captain has played the last little while. But of course, there's never a negative word uttered about those two when it comes from the coach. So I don't know what kind of head games that is, or if it was just a reactionary thing that Paul Maurice may regret he said, and then again, of course, covered his tracks after. But if Jack Roslovic was one of the worst players on the ice, he was not alone last night, as you guys well know. And I find it odd.
Jay, the question of the day appears to be Dustin Byfuglien, of course, because right now, or the conversation point, I should say, it's not really a question, but the conversation point is all about Dustin Byfuglien and the situation there. And what's your take on it? Because, we just spent the last segment talking about it, and it's just so unusual. And how do you see this kind of playing out?
I listen to you guys with interest, and you're right. There's been so much discussion about it, right from the day in training camp when they stepped out in front of the microphone, coach and GM, and said that he wasn't going to be around, and nothing sinister. Nothing sinister. I don't know what that exactly means. We've never quite understood what that means, but clearly it was a guy that wasn't sure what he was going to, if he wanted to continue playing hockey again. But this ankle injury and the subsequent surgery has really, really baffled all of us, including you guys. And you talked about it already. All I can surmise about the whole thing is that what we know about Dustin Byfuglien. This is a guy that does not do things. It's going to come across being wrong, but he doesn't come across as doing things what we've come accustomed to for a normal athlete. Behind the scenes, he's always talked about as being this great guy, and he's this great team player, and he's a jokester and all that stuff. And of course, we don't see a lot of that when we enter the room because we don't speak to him much. So I can honestly say that of all the Jets I've talked to, I would say that I know Dustin Byfuglien the least. But he certainly marches to the beat of his own drum. We know that. And it just seems like everything has been done in the wrong order here. If the ankle injury needed tending to, then why was the surgery not done with the cooperation of the team so that he can continue to get paid and continue to get, his health get monitored by the team? So it's astounding to me the way that this has unfolded. And I just don't know how he comes back and plays with this organization. I really don't. 4 months recovery, You know, that puts us well into the spring. The Winnipeg Jets could be long out of a playoff battle, or they could be battling for a wild card spot. In the meantime, that cap space just sits there, and you wonder, at what point does Kevin Cheveldayoff have to make a move? Does he acquire a defenseman for $3 or $4 million, somebody who's out there right now? And does that really help them in the long run? I mean, does that really push them over the edge? Are they better off just rolling the dice and trying for a wild card spot or a draft, you know, a draft lottery spot? I don't know. It's just the oddest thing. It's potentially the oddest thing that we've seen in the short history of the Jets 2.0.
Jason Bell is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're talking, of course, about the Winnipeg Jets, the team that Jason covers for the Winnipeg Free Press. You know, Jason, your colleague Mike McIntyre had a column in the paper basically saying that Kevin Cheveldayoff and the Jets organization sort of owe more to the fans of the team and the paying customers of the team than what they've provided in terms of an explanation regarding Dustin Byfuglien and the situation. Do you agree with Mike's premise that the manner in which the team has handled this is maybe less than ideal as it pertains to their paying customer?
I think there's sort of been maybe a little bit more upfrontness on the fact that, you know, Dustin Byfuglien is literally just, he's at home, not entirely sure if he wants to continue his playing career. And in the meantime, you know, we as an organization are going to continue to try and provide a good product. We're going to try and fill that hole, and we're going to keep you up to date on the Dustin Byfuglien situation. And of course, that really didn't happen. And the yesterday's or 2 days ago's little press appearance by Kevin Cheveldayoff was a bit of a sham. Obviously, he continued to make it sound like he was forced into standing in front of the mics because the media had been seeking some kind of comment and was for some time, and it almost felt obliged to do it even though he had nothing really to offer. I mean, there is a certain amount of privacy that Dustin Byfuglien deserves. And I appreciate that. And there's all kinds of rumors and speculation of what's gone on with him behind the scenes. But the fact remains, right at the beginning of this whole ordeal, again, the words "nothing sinister" continued to come out. Mm-hmm. So that would lead me to believe that there's really nothing untoward happening here. It's just a matter of a man who doesn't know what he wants to do with his future. And, you know, we've asked, does the Winnipeg Jets have a deadline on when Dustin Byfuglien needs to make a decision? Well, we haven't even been able to ask that question. There's been no chance that they were going to entertain that question for us, which I find odd, because they kept saying that the deadline is on Dustin Byfuglien. Well, that's not entirely sure. I mean, this is a business they're running, guys. And we hear this all the time, that this is a business, right? Yes, they've given him the care and consideration. They've given him an appropriate amount of time. At some point, though, the business has to kick in, and you have to move on. And that's where I'm just a little fascinated by all this, that they haven't taken a little more of a business approach to this. And that's what the fans, I think, are clamoring about. They want to know that the Jets have a plan there, and that it's like a contingency on whether Dustin Byfuglien does or does not come back. That yes, their general manager realizes that they need help in the back end, and he's looking, and the looking goes beyond just the waiver wire pickups. I mean, I got nothing against Carl Dahlstrom and Lucas Pisa, but I mean, these were discarded players from other organizations, and these are not good organizations either. So I just maybe there's no precedent for this. Maybe the Winnipeg Jets didn't know how to handle this, but they have not been forthcoming, and I can understand why fans who pay big dollars, whether they go to all 41 games or they split them up in four ways, I can understand why they just like to know what they're paying for and what the rest of the season is going to look like.
And Jay, the Jets-Sharks game just ended about 10 hours ago or so. So the Jets leave SAP Center. They steal 2 points from the Sharks off of the back of Hellebuck in those 51 saves. But they've got another game coming up, as you know, tonight in Vegas at 9:30 Winnipeg time.
9 o'clock.
Sorry, 9 o'clock Winnipeg time. Golden Knights are coming off of a really disappointing loss to the Habs in overtime. They've lost two of their last three. They lost a stinker to Colorado three games ago. What are you expecting out of the Jets? They're obviously going to get Adam Lowry back after serving his two-game suspension. They might get Patrick Laine back in the lineup. Wouldn't it be incredible if the Jets were able to get 4 points in this back-to-back, considering everything that's going on with this team?
Well, it would have, but I mean, I guess all points are important. I get that. The Jets are a middling team. We understand that. Is it more important for them to go into Vegas, get absolutely annihilated again in every aspect of the game, except somehow they managed to steal a point or two? Is that going to make people happy? Or do they need to just go in and play what they always seem to do against Vegas, is play a fairly strong competitive game back and forth, maybe show a little pushback. I'm not talking about fighting, but just show. I mean, this team has shown no pushback at all most of the National Hockey League season, right from the time that Brian Little took his hit in the preseason. I know they don't have Dustin Bufflin in the lineup. I know that the Anthony Paluso's of the world are long gone. Show some pushback in Vegas tonight. Be competitive. Give your goaltender, who we know is going to be Laurent Brossoit tonight, give Laurent an opportunity to not have to stand on his head. And yeah, certainly try and push for a victory, but just be competitive. You know, sort of man up and take account for the last two games you just played, which were pretty lousy, and your leadership group has to be better. I mean, 55 and 26 have to be better. Nikolaj Ehlers has been outstanding this season. We would all agree. And I was the first one to say that I think they should have been dealt last summer because their back end was going to get decimated, and he was the trade chip. Certainly, it's looking like they were the wisest to not trade him. But give Nikolaj Ehlers some help. Brian Little has been outstanding everywhere except the faceoff dot. He's been very, very good since his return. Neil Pionk, I think we'd all agree, has been a revelation. Josh Morrissey is struggling, but he's a young player with so much responsibility on him right now. I just think collectively this group has to be so much better tonight. And then they can go home after a road trip and say, you know what? We got 4 of 6, or we got 3 of 6, or even we got 2 of 6, but boy, our game took a bit of a turn in Vegas, because it certainly has been trending downward the last few nights.
Jason Bell covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Free Press. Jason, I always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. Enjoy the...
Sorry for the slow start, guys. I get perplexed out there, finally.
You're all good, Jason. Enjoy Vancouver. We'll see you back in Winnipeg next week.
Always enjoy my time with you guys. Thanks so much. You're a class group.
Take care, Jason. Thanks again.
Bye.
When we come back, we discuss the Jets' decision to send Ville Heinola back to the Manitoba Moose, or down to the Manitoba Moose, and what that means for the Jets' defense going forward. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
The second thing, obviously, you'll hear, you know, shortly, is we're going to assign Ville Heinola to the Moose. He hasn't played in a couple of games, so we're going to give him the opportunity to, you know, go and play some games at the Moose.
He's okay staying, or is there a chance he can still go back to Finland, or where does that stand?
There's a lot of options, you know, there in that regard. There's nothing etched in stone either way, being a first-round draft pick.
Winnipeg Jets general manager Kevin Cheveldayoff talking about the team's decision to send Ville Heinola to the Manitoba Moose. The Jets defense getting a little bit healthier. We are expecting Nathan Beaulieu to make his season debut probably next week, maybe Tuesday, against the New Jersey Devils as the team returns home. He's not expected to play tonight for the Jets in Vegas. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day. This segment of the program is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. So the Jets did send Ville Heinola back to the Manitoba Moose. He's still
back
to the Manitoba Moose, pardon me. He still does have the option to go play in Finland if he so chooses to do that.
He could also be recalled by the Jets.
He could also be recalled by the Jets.
You mentioned that off air, and I mean, that's something I think you do have to keep in the back of your mind, that this doesn't necessarily mean that Heinola is done this year with the Jets.
I want to explain one thing to the audience who may not know, that there's a difference between using a year of your entry-level contract, which is what happens if you play 10 games at the NHL level, and the difference between moving 1 year closer to free agency. He only banks that 1 year towards free agency if he plays 40 NHL games. So if Ville Heinola was to, play, let's say, 20 games for the Jets, it would burn the first year of that entry-level contract, but it would not count as a year of service time towards becoming an unrestricted free agent. So there is a difference between the two, which is why you hear a lot of teams say they're less concerned with the 10-game mark than they are with the 40-game mark.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But you look at this Jets team right now, and you look at this Jets defense. I know they're getting healthier, but and I know the Jets head coach and most head coaches don't really like young players. But I have trouble believing that Ville Heinola isn't a better option than some of the players they had out on the ice last night.
No, absolutely. And my whole point with this is, I get it. You want Ville Heinola, Dave, to play more of a top four role.
Mm-hmm.
But couldn't he be playing in a top four role for the Jets? Right? Like, no, I'm serious. And yeah. And that's not, a knock against anybody, because, we're going to have Pascal Vincent coming up. And I think he would agree that Sammy Niku, his upside is a top four defenseman in the NHL as well. So,
and Niku's going to play for the Moose today, right, Dave?
Correct, yeah.
Right. And so, if Niku was healthy the whole year, he would be in the Jets lineup. So obviously, Kevin Cheveldayoff gets paid a lot more than I do. He's the one that makes these decisions. Yeah, just by a little bit. But Paul Maurice and Chevy, and as an organization, they made this move. What I'm saying is, I guess the way he played early on in the season, Drew,
mm-hmm.
8 games, 5 points in 8 games, and not just that, but the minutes he was playing, Dave, and mm-hmm. we've talked a lot about it, and Dennis and Kevin Sawyer talk a lot about it on the broadcast. Obviously his hockey IQ is really high, and he's got great composure under pressure. I guess what I'm saying is, I think, and I was one of the people that didn't think he was going to make the team out of training camp, even though he was good in the preseason. I just thought he was going to go back to Finland, but I guess what I'm saying is, in a roundabout way, he played so well and impressed me so much that I was all for the Jets burning the entry level and just letting him play the whole season with the Jets.
The defense being what it is for the Jets, he certainly didn't look out of place. I understand, and we've talked about, not rushing players and everything else, but, at some point in time, I don't know that it was hindering his development to stay with the Jets. Now, it would be hindering his development if he was going to be the extra defenseman.
Well, that's the issue.
Night in, night out.
You're hindering his development, Dave, if he's a healthy scratch.
But I'm saying, mm-hmm.
He's got to play. 18-year-old hockey players have to play.
For a while there, I still would have had him in the lineup over some of the roster decisions the Jets made, Dave.
Yeah, no, I think that Heinola has shown that he can play at the NHL level. He's a really, good young man. And but the problem is his minutes under Maurice were petering out, right?
Right.
So the last game he played 13 minutes.
Yeah.
Which the game before that was 14 minutes. Now right. The game before that against the Islanders, he played over 20 minutes. Now, to my mind, and I always say this, is that I always think that guys are better off playing in the AHL and developing as opposed to sitting in the NHL and either getting, very limited minutes or to your point, Drew, not, sitting in the press box.
Yeah, so, press box is not a legitimate
option. So to a guy like, Heinola, and it's interesting, right? Because the organization is at a crossroads in terms of, this whole idea of draft and develop. Well, you can only draft and develop for so long. You can't draft and develop forever. And your veterans aren't going to be super interested. And we've heard Blake Wheeler say this. I'm here right now and I've got a contract and I want to win right now. I'm not interested in what's going to happen with Ville Heinola's contract in, 5 years
mm-hmm.
or 6 years or 7 years. Now, that's not to say he doesn't care about the organization, but the fact is that these guys are in win now mode. Brian Little, the older guys on your team are in a position to be trying to win the Stanley Cup. They're not saying we want this organization to be in its best moments in 7 to 8 years when we're probably not going to be factors on this team anymore.
Well, to your point, Dave, I'm sure the veterans on this team, walk into the dressing room and, they're going to be loyal soldiers about it, but they have to look around and say, how much longer can we continue to play with this undermanned roster? Looking at last night's performance, case in point where you give up 53 shots on goal
mm-hmm.
and you see the sizable salary cap space that's now available with Dustin Byfuglien out and you know, who knows how indefinite that is, but mm-hmm. out. Mm-hmm. And you know, when can we start to begin to think about upgrading this team? Because in its current form, it's just not good enough, and they know that more than anybody else does. Right. The guys in that dressing room.
Yep.
And Ville Heinola, now with the Manitoba Moose, who knows if he's going to be there back in Finland, is just another piece in this rotating puzzle of chaos that has sort of been the Jets' season to start this year. When we come back, Manitoba Moose head coach Pascal Vincent is going to join us. We'll talk about the Moose, the start of their season. They have a two-game homestand this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, against Grand Rapids. We talked to him about those games, and we talked to him about his roster, which has certainly been injury-depleted as well. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve as part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio. 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuke and Ezra Ginsberg. You can reach us in studio via Twitter. Send your tweets to @IllegalCurve. If you prefer text message, you can do that as well. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And, of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program the head coach of the Manitoba Moose, Pascal Vincent, joins us on the line. Pascal, good morning, and thanks so much for doing this.
My pleasure. Good morning, guys.
Good morning, Pascal. Obviously, the Moose have a two-game homestand starting this afternoon and then tomorrow afternoon against the Grand Rapids Griffins, looking to get off to a better start than the team has been so far this season. You know, 1-7 through their first eight games, but if you had to sort of take a step back and maybe forget about the actual results on the ice, how would you evaluate the team's performance thus far?
Well, we look at it from different perspectives. Obviously, the collective result is not exactly what we were expecting, but at the same time, a hockey season is almost like a hockey game. When you know your plan when the season starts, you know your plan when the game when the game starts. But things change really, really quick within the season, and then we all know that in our league, well, the people that are following the American League, it can change really quick. So it starts with a practice where we're on the ice and Eric Comrie is being claimed off waivers by Phoenix or Arizona, and it right away changes the dynamic. And so things like this can change the picture. Having said that, we know what we signed up for. And our goal is to develop players and to produce positive players so they can eventually help the Jets win hockey games. So we want to look at our collective results and go back at it and evaluate the process. And there's a few games where the result could have been different. Just post and in instead of post and out. But I think at the end of the year, it's going to balance out, and the work ethic is there. Their group is really tight. They work extremely hard, and now it's just a matter of putting the pieces of the puzzle together. But we don't want to lose sight of our number one priority, which is developing players, and that's really important because in this situation, we could easily. I don't want to say easily, but being coaches and hockey people and competitive people, we could lose sight of our number one job and priority, which is developing players. So we want to keep playing our young guys.
Pascal, we have to ask you about CJ Cease. I imagine you had quite a big smile on your face yesterday when you heard the official news that the Jets were recalling him and he ended up playing in his first NHL game. I believe that his mom wasn't able to attend, but I think his sister was able to be in San Jose for the game. So that's always good to have that family support for your first NHL game. But I guess, can you just talk about CJ Cease? Obviously had some injury issues last year. Just how nice was that for him to finally get his first NHL game at 25 years old?
Yeah, it's amazing. Every time we have a guy being called up and playing his first game with the Jets, it's always a big day. That's a day you'll remember for the rest of your life. And for CJ, he came to Winnipeg last year and had a good camp and then came with us and had a real good start and then got injured and lost basically the rest of the year and the effort and the time spent in the gym that he had to do in order to get back in the position he's in right now, that's very impressive. So, you know what? Very happy. When I called him to tell him he was being called up, I could sense the smile in his face, in his face on the phone. Very excited, very happy for him. So it's, you know, and that's what we do. That's what we like to do here. When we make that call, it's always a nice part of our job.
Coach, you're going to have to start running your practices in Finnish if the Jets continue to give you Finnish players. You got Ville Heinola back from the, or he sent down from the Jets to your organization. So number one question I have for you is, what's the message that has to be to Heinola in terms of, you know, when he gets assigned? And the other question is how do you see Christian Vesalainen's development so far this year?
Dave, I didn't hear the first part of your question.
Oh, the question was just how, what's the message to Ville Heinola when he comes down from the Jets?
Yeah, okay. Well, first of all, the language, we'll need to learn Finnish, maybe some Russian, and we have two French coaches, one English, so there's a lot of different languages on the ice, which is nice, but so VH, we call him VH, you know what, he's got a smile on his face, he came to our camp, so we drafted him, he's our first round pick. We, the coaches, never seen him play. We're being told a great player, hockey sense, off the chart, ability to move the puck, eventually going to be able to run a power play, and so on. And that's what we get. But at the same time, you've never seen those guys. So we bring VH to Belleville. Does his first game, he had a little bit of a hard time managing the puck, but jet lag and stuff like that. Second game, he's a good player. Third game, wow, he's really good. And then he goes to the Jets camp, and then he keeps getting better and better and better. So quite impressive for a young player like him on the fence as well. So the message to him is, you know what? What he's done so far, we really like it. And we don't want to lose that. We don't want to lose his passion for the game, because I think you look at his skill set, what you see on the ice, everybody can see it. But what you guys don't see, or you may see it eventually, is his passion for the game. So yesterday, that's his first practice, pardon me, with the Moose. And he's staying on the ice, and he's having fun playing hockey. And to me, I've had a few guys that had that much fun playing hockey, and those guys are very, very successful, or they were successful at playing in the National Hockey League for a long time. So that's one thing that he does really well, or he has the passion for the game. And to me, that's a big skill. Because if you don't have it, it can make a difference in the long term. So VH, the message is, We're going to play him. We're going to explain to him. And there's a few things that we do here. He comes here and we open the lines of communication. So we know what the Jets are telling the players. But once he gets here, we communicate with him what is expected. The systems are the same, right? So there's no adjustment there. But we open the lines of communication. We talk to him, but we make sure he knows that he can talk to us as well. For whatever, on ice, off ice issues, we can talk. And then we look at him, we evaluate his game, and then we sit down again and reassess. And that's what we do consistently. So we sit, we talk, we play, evaluate, sit down again, talk, evaluate, play, and then we keep going on like this. And that's how we develop our players, and that's our motto. So VH, where we're going to play him, he's going to be on the power play today. He's going to play against the top, a second line. It might be a little bit different. It will be different. The adjustment will be different because it's a different league. And there's a little bit more confusion in our league than it is in the NHL. So it's going to be an adjustment. So we'll see after the weekend. We'll sit down and we'll evaluate the weekend and go from there. But there's one thing we don't want to lose, his passion and his smile. When he goes on the ice, there's a guy I've coached, Marc-Andre Fleury. You see him smile during games. well, he's got the same kind of attitude right now, and we don't want to lose that because that means a lot to us.
Pascal Vincent is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know Pascal, of course, as the head coach of the Manitoba Moose. You know, Pascal, Christian Vesalainen is still looking for his first goal on the season. He's played in all eight games for the Moose so far. You know, you had him last year briefly before he went back overseas. How has he changed from last year to this year, and how do you see his development as a player?
Well, he understands a bit more what it's all about. Those guys, and even myself, before I came here with the Jets, or even more so, with the Moose, I didn't appreciate the talent level at the American Hockey League level. I didn't appreciate how hard it was to win hockey games or how hard it was to perform at this level, because I didn't know much about this league. Mainly Europeans, they don't really know about the AHL. They weren't exposed to this kind of hockey. So Ves came here last year, started the season with the Jets, comes down with and it's normal. They all do it with an attitude where I'm going to be dominant in that league. Of course, they don't know about it, and it doesn't happen right away. So there's a period of what's going on here, and he goes from there. So he went back home. He had all the rights to do it. He came back to Winnipeg. The attitude, is work ethic. Everything was perfect. Had a real good summer of training, but we talked about different things. The first one is one-on-one battles and getting stronger and faster. We know he can shoot the puck. We know he has a good size, and we know he has a good stick. He's trying to use his stick. We know eventually his board game has to be really good for him in order to become a successful player, positive player in the National Hockey League. So that's what we're working on. And it's going to take some time. We see a shot in practices. It's going to come eventually in the games, but he's working extremely hard. He's asking Marty Johnston quite often to go on the ice before a practice. Hey, I want to work on a few things, and we like that. And we do it with him and all of our players. But there's a real desire to improve. And to me, that part alone will help him get better. Right now, we look at the stats. It doesn't look great. Fine. But there's a lot of stats that people don't have access to, and it tells us that he's improving. He's improving. I think for Ves, he's still a very young player, first of all. He's a tall man, but he's not necessarily a strong man. And that will come because he's spending time in the gym. He works hard on the ice. When he gets those two pieces together, he's tall. He's got it. He's got a long stick. He can shoot the puck. It's just a matter of getting him stronger. And when that happens, and it might take a year, it might take, 2 years, I don't know, but he's going to get stronger. So that's when we're going to be able to really evaluate where he's at. But right now, he's doing everything that he's been asked for to do. He's done it. And with actually with extras, because he's been working extra hard on the ice.
Pascal, Sammy Niku is going to play for your club this afternoon. He's only got into the three games with the Moose and then the one game with the Jets. Did you have an option today for playing Sammy? Because I imagine he probably just said, no, I got to get back on the ice, coach.
No, Sammy wants to play hockey games, yeah. He's been anxious. It's just a weird start of the season for him. And I feel for Sammy because we have a strong relationship. We spent a lot of time with us here with the Moose, and just a weird start of the season, injury and a car accident. You don't plan those things, obviously. So for Sammy, it's just a matter of getting back out there, getting that confidence back. Because when it's a thin line, even more so for the offensive guys. When you're an offensive guy and you need to produce and you need that first pass on the tape every single time, you need to produce on the power play, the confidence can be lost quite easily or pretty fast. In this case, I'm not saying he's lost his confidence. I'm just saying that he needs to get back out there and to build it back up and to know, okay, I'm a good player. I'm a, going to keep getting better and better. But he needs to play games. That, the bottom line is that's what we're here for. We play our guys so they can get back to with the big team when they call and for them to be ready. So that's we can evaluate Sami Niku in many ways, but right now our plan is just to play him as much as we can for as long as we have to until they call him back up.
You know, Coach, you've talked about the development aspect of your organization, and one player who's caught my eye early on, and it is early in his pro career, is Jonathan Kovacevic. He's been a real nice find for you guys. You know, five games so far, one goal, two assists for the Moose. But what have you noticed from his play from the 2017 third round pick of the Jets?
Yeah, he looks like a hockey player to me. And what I mean by that, they all look like players, but he looks like a defenseman. So how much value do you put? We hear, you know, people talking about Ville and Sammy and Toby Enstrom and Josh Morrissey and the people see the player with the puck. They see, you know, making a first pass or being on the power play or making a great neutral zone transition to that leads to a scoring chance. But how much value do we put on the defensive game of a player? That's something we don't really talk about, but we do. And the value of those little plays that are not on the stat sheet after the game, we do evaluate that. And to us, Colby, we call him Colby or Johnny, whatever you like. he looks like a strong defenseman out there that can defend against the top line. He has a presence, really good at finding his men in front of the net, boxing out, finding sticks, so he takes those options away when the opponents are looking for deflections in front of the net, getting back to the puck. So there's a dump in our zone, going back to a puck, and you know you're being chased by one or two guys and they want that puck back. It's a game of, and I hate the word, but it's a game of bullies. You go out there, it's either you have the puck or I have the puck, and it's black or white. So, Johnny goes back to retrieving those pucks, knowing he's under pressure, and he will try to make those plays or control the area, even though he knows he's going to get hit and probably really hard. So, all those little pieces of his game, components of his game, are really good, and he's been improving. Yes, the points are great. He's got some points, but really for him, that first pass, making sure he cleans the front of the net, making plays under pressure, penalty kill. We used him a few times on the power play because he's decent. He's offensively also gifted, but he I think he has the potential to become a real specific defenseman for us and then for the Jets with a specific role. And that's what I'm trying to say here. So to me, the size, the stick, his ability to learn and to read, his ability to take what we've been talking about and to bring it on the ice is quite impressive. So that's a real good, interesting project and person for us because he's like a sponge right now and you can see on the ice he's a positive player. He's at the end of the game we calculate the score and chances for and against, but who's responsible, who's really responsible, because the plus and minus that you see on this game sheet are not necessarily relevant or they don't mean a whole lot to us at times, and Colby is a positive player, so he's doing a lot of good things. But first and foremost, he's a hardworking, intelligent kid that wants to get better. And once you have that, well, I don't know what his ceiling is, but I have good faith in him. I think he's going to become a very good player.
Pascal Vincent is the Manitoba Moose head coach. The Moose are in action this afternoon and tomorrow afternoon against the Grand Rapids Griffins. You can hear this afternoon's game live on TSN Radio 1290 and, of course, all Moose games on moosehockey.com. Coach, thanks so much for joining us this morning. Appreciate your time and insight. Best of luck in the two-game set against Grand Rapids this weekend.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Take care, Pascal. When we come back, we talk about the Winnipeg Jets head coach, Paul Maurice. He's in the final year of his contract. We talk about the ramifications of his expiring deal. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve as part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Well, I really don't discuss, much about coaches' contracts. Paul Maurice is a great coach, and for us, I think he's a really good fit.
Short but sweet, Kevin Cheveldayoff answering the question.
Couldn't you just ended that much?
Could have. Answering the question, or discussing, I guess, Paul Maurice's contract status. He's in his final year of his contract, which I gotta say was news, because when the Jets announced that Maurice had a contract extension a number of years ago, they never actually released the terms of it, which
there's no obligation, though.
It's a little odd. It's a little odd that you don't at some point in time know until you're in the midst of the final year of the contract.
Well, do most teams announce? I'm just wondering if you put it up against the other 30 teams.
I haven't done empirical research, but I'm going to say that you usually know if a coach is in the final year of his contract before that final year of the contract begins. In any event,
Dave was saying, though, is do you know at the time the contract is signed?
Usually one of the insiders then tweets out, after the announcement, they signed a 3-year deal with a option to be a consultant for 2 years after that, or some nonsense along those lines.
Well, you're referencing Bruce Boudreau there.
Right.
I mean, that's kind of a new phenomenon.
Well,
that didn't really used to exist.
That's because Boudreau is also a bit of an older coach at this stage in his career, more than Maurice.
Well, Ken Hitchcock has also
same
had that,
thing,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. Where the guys who are sort of on their, towards the end of their coaching career, are looking to get a soft landing in management or in scouting.
A guy
after
like
that.
John Hines or Jim Montgomery doesn't get that.
That's correct. Exactly. Anyways, Paul Maurice, in the midst of his final year as of a contract with the Winnipeg Jets. And, there's always the talk about, the quote unquote lame duck player in the final year of his contract, lame duck coach, approaching the end of his contract. Are you surprised that the Jets haven't extended Paul Maurice's contract for an organization that values, consistency and values longevity and values loyalty as much as the Jets organization purports to do so? Are you surprised that there hasn't been a contract extension, for better or worse, for Paul Maurice?
I'm a little bit surprised that here in Winnipeg we haven't been talking about it more, if we're being honest, right? Because it's not something that I think about a lot, that Paul Maurice is in the last year of his contract. Sorry, we just had Pascal Vincent on, so I've got coaches on the brain. But, I mean, I think that the Jets want to see what they have here with this group and this team. Because, you look at them, Dave, it's a 500 hockey team right now. And, yes, you've had, I think, probably the most bizarre start to the season that we've maybe ever seen a hockey team have.
Well, certainly in Winnipeg, yes.
Well, I mean,
Jets 2.0, yes.
Well, I mean, you have, Pascal talked about it, car accidents. You have Mason Appleton, breaking his arm playing football before breaking a bone in his foot. The point is,
it's odd.
There have been so many different things that have happened that are beyond the norm of what you expect. You expect injuries with hockey teams, but the Jets, Sammy Niku. Well, I mean, it just Brian Little. I mean, it just goes on and on and on with the injuries. And so what I'm saying is, I think, right now, you can't blame Paul Maurice for the fact that this is a 500 team with the turnover on defense, which before the injuries even happened, I mean, half of the Jets defense, basically the entire right side is new, Dave. Right? I mean, Trouba, Buff Meyer's gone. So, I mean, you could argue that, Chevy maybe should have brought in, another top four defenseman. I would certainly argue the Jets could benefit from a top four defenseman on the right side right now. But again, is it Chevy's fault that Buff decided to leave the team? Of course not. So my point is, I think whether or not Maurice is going to get an extension has a lot to do with how the next 2 to 4 months play out.
That was going to be my question, right? Dave. So, are the Jets, by not extending Paul Maurice and by letting him, play in the midst or coach in the midst of his final year of his contract, are they saying to him, prove it? Prove yourself again? Prove yourself that you deserve a contract extension?
Well,
because this is very out of character from the Winnipeg Jets organization in my mind.
Well, it's interesting because this is now 6th full season with leading the Jets. And to me, he actually, this is almost like a life preserver, because instead of having to do what you just suggested, which is prove yourself with a group, there's a lot of things he can point to now and say, well, how was I supposed to do it? I had the Bufflin situation. I had players injured. I had, guys not performing. So he's, I mean, you could say, well, why didn't you get more out of this group? I'm just saying that this has given him almost like a life preserver to be able to say, well, look, this is this reason X, Y, and Z as to why it was going to be difficult for the, for me this year. So I'm just saying from that perspective and from him, it's a little bit difficult. But I mean, look, the reality is we didn't even know about this until a week ago.
Right.
So in theory, is it out of character? Not really, because the truth is the Jets didn't reveal anything. It's not like the Jets said, hey, Paul Maurice is in the last year of his deal. This information came out outside from them, right? So the reality is that it's not like the Jets release this and somehow they put him into this limbo. He was put in limbo on the information.
But as the season unfolds,
well, especially with the questions that are going to come now,
this becomes an increasing talking point.
Sure, of course,
all for the rest of the season.
And Dave, I think it's somewhat impressive that the Jets are 500, considering that you basically haven't seen the same group of defensemen consistently. You've had injuries to key players. I mean, we haven't even talked about Patrick Laine. I mean, you haven't had Laine the last two games. Laine has arguably been their best forward aside from Nikolai Ehlers, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you haven't had Laine the last couple of games. If they have Laine in Anaheim, there's a good chance that result is different. At least the game would have been closer.
What do the Jets actually have, though? They have three regular, never mind overtime, and never mind shootout. They have three wins in the 60 minutes of regulation time hockey. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've won three games in 60 minutes of 14. So I think very much so their record of 7-7, which isn't great, flatters them compared to their actual performance. And I think the contract status of Paul Maurice is something to keep a close eye on over the next, well, however many games the Jets season lasts. I guess another 68 games unless it gets resolved before that. When we come back, Ken Danico is going to join us. The Devils are in town on Tuesday night to face the Jets. We'll talk about the Devils, the Jets' opponent, when they return home. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.